This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Welcome back, everybody. This is Wells Tech, episode 512, recorded on August 29th, that's a Tuesday, in the year 2017. Thanks again for joining us. We're so happy that you did, and hopefully we can provide some useful information about technology and ministry. Really kind of the brains behind the operation is over there in New Ulm, Minnesota, and that is my podcasting partner, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally. Not just the brains, but also the beauty behind the show as well.
Man. I thought you were talking about my husband or something there for a minute. I didn't know what you were talking about, but goodness, I've never been accused of being the brains of anything. What I am excited for, Martin, besides being the brains of Wells Tech, apparently, is the fact that it's Labor Day weekend coming up. So do you have big plans for the long weekend?
We're going to see two grandkids in Southern Indiana. Right. So we're leaving Friday afternoon and going to enjoy our time down there. So
the weather will be cooperative.
And I know that we're going to have a great time with the two boys. 3 and 1, they are.
Very fun. And you wanted to ask me what?
I wanted to ask you what?
Yeah, what were you going to ask me in reciprocal?
What are you going to do?
I'm so glad you asked, Martin. Well, see, we have a new member of our family, and we're going to be debuting that member over Labor Day weekend. This spring, Kevin and I bought a motorhome, a very old used motorhome that has a lot of heart. And we named her Mary D. Mary D, the RV. Mary D is actually a favorite character from a Hank the Cowdog book, which is a children's book. But we have spent this last 6 months or so renovating Mary D, and now she is lovely and she wants to go camping. And we're going to go for the very first time and actually hook up to water and electricity and try out the shower and do all kinds of fun things. So I'm super excited to take Mary D on the road for Labor Day 2017.
You sound very optimistic.
You heard it here, folks. We are. If the motor gets us over to the campsite, which is only about 30 minutes away, we're going to consider that.
Start small. Baby steps is good. Yes.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
When are we going to get to see this? We've never seen any pictures or anything.
Yeah. I'm planning for a big debut.
Like under a big black sheet that there's some kind of unveiling, or is this something if I drove past your house, I'd see.
It's been parked here for quite a while this summer, for sure. We have somewhere that we store it. But we do want to share the interior. We just finished a huge project building a Murphy bed in the back bedroom, and we've tested that out, got a brand new mattress, and that all seems to be working well. So that was probably our last big project on the interior.
You heard with Hurricane Harvey, of course, that gas prices are going up a little bit too for that.
So yeah, and it gets a whopping like 6 miles or something like that to the gallon. So that'll be a lot of fun to fill her up.
Well, 30 miles divided by 6, that's not too bad.
So yeah.
As long as you keep your radius pretty small, you'd be fine.
There you go. Anyway, well, tune in next week.
I want pictures and I want the whole experience, maybe even a blog post or something.
Going to be a lot of fun. Very excited.
Any tech in there, or is it all just kind of bare necessities?
Right now, it's pretty bare. We did new flooring and walls and all kinds of updates like that. But tech is coming and it's going to be pretty fun.
Okay. So. That is exciting. That is a new chapter in the life of the Draper family. So,
yep.
I thought you were talking about the new additions you made over the summer. You have two new.
That's old news.
No, it's somebody else.
Two new daughter-in-laws in the family and a lovely new RV. New to us, very old RV, but right. We like it.
Mary D. All right. Mm-hmm. Not familiar with that story. All right. Well, this is the last time we're going to be focusing, at least semi-exclusively on our ministry resource show. So we decided at the beginning of the summer that, hey, what could be better than taking a swing every other week at our own focus on ministry resources? And it's been great. So this is the last one we're going to be doing until we kind of get back in the regular swing of things, kind of the regular show agenda with ministry resource this week. And I drew the straw to be the last one up, and I kind of had fun with this one. I'm going to be talking about, and there's a blog post already out there with some video and such, portable presentation toolkit is what I call it. So I do a lot of presentations. It kind of goes in ebbs and flows. Over the summer, it's a little bit slower, but in the fall, winter, and spring, it seems like I get a lot of chances to do presentations on all kinds of different things, technology, productivity, website development, all kinds of different things. And I really love to do that, getting out in the field and talking to people. But one of the challenges of doing that is you always have a different setting and situation for presentation technology. So you've got to deal with projectors and cables and lighting and internet and just all kinds of things. And no two places are the same. Some are pretty well equipped. Some are fairly well equipped, but something could go wrong. And some are just not very well equipped at all. So you really want to try and take as much stress, at least I do, out of the situation as possible and bring as much as you can with you. So that's what I wrote up here and can share just a couple of the highlights that I think are valuable.
Martin, yes. I guess many people can relate to this, maybe not exactly in the same way you do as our chief technology officer. You're getting invitations to different conferences and things, but I think that many of our pastors and teachers and staff ministers do attend conferences, are asked to present, even to present in another building or for another church or school nearby or whatever it may be. But I think many of us have opportunity to try to set up somewhere else and experience these challenges of trying to make your computer work in another ecosystem.
Even if you're in a situation that you're very familiar with, could be on your home turf, cables go bad, bulbs burn out. There's all kinds of things that could go wrong. And really, all those things stand in the way of kind of the important part of the presentation, which is the content that you've taken the time to put together. So
absolutely. So the worst thing that can happen is that something like that sabotage your great presentation.
Exactly. So try to take all the stress out of the situation by putting together, I call it a toolkit that I bring almost to every presentation, that whether I need it or not, I know I've got it. And in many cases, I have needed it. So there were a couple categories. I have a category called cables, one called wireless, so the ability to go cableless, audio and video, and then finally connectivity. And I start with cables because those are kind of the those are really the key to connecting with an existing projector. And you never quite know what adapters you're going to need. So I carry both a VGA and an HDMI adapter, but I also carry extender cables. What I have found is that, especially if I'm presenting in a classroom, the way you connect to a projector is sometimes at the teacher's desk, which is oftentimes at the back of the room. And very often you don't want to present from the back of the room, you want to present from the front of the room. So I try and get as long a connector as I can to string that cable to the front, if at all possible. And I do that probably even half the time I do presentations, because I need to be at my computer. And very often the presentations I do require being on the web. So it's not just a static slide that I'm presenting, but some kind of interactivity with a website or social network or something like that. So cables are a really important part of this toolkit. And cables have come down a lot in price. If you go to something like a website like Cables2Go or Monoprice, you can get cables at a pretty cheap price.
Yeah, one cable you didn't mention, Martin, that I have forgotten on more than one occasion is my power cable. So, yeah, if you want to get real basic for me, I would have power cables.
It starts with power. Mm-hmm. One challenge with kind of putting all this stuff together is keeping it all organized. And I've mentioned this little product before. I'm holding a product called GridIt, and it's simply a kind of a stiff board that has one of these nice elastic rubberized bands going crisscross through it. There's, I don't know how many of them are there are, but I can fit, and this is a smaller one, maybe 8x12, something like that. But I can fit 1, 2, 3, 4, about 8 different kinds of adapters and cables on this board, this GridIt board. It's by a company called Cocoon. And this just kind of slides in my bag and keeps things organized, and I can find something quickly rather than untangling things or trying to dig through 20 different things in your bag. This kind of keeps things organized, and these aren't very expensive. So probably going to get another one or a bigger one, because there are a couple dongles here that that don't fit on this smaller one. So I would recommend this for anybody who's got kind of serious cable issues, and it's a good thing to put in the bag.
Personal experience here. I have one. I enjoy it greatly. But I usually just use it with my work computer. It's kind of my work cable organizer. Mm-hmm. And when I traveled for my son's wedding recently, I didn't take it along. Didn't take a computer, actually. But I did take a lot of cables for different, my phone, for instance, right, and different things like that. And I ended up losing one, which made me very sad. So if I'd had my little GridIt along, I'm sure I wouldn't have done that. But yep, they can easily get away from you if you don't have a good system for them.
Exactly. So the next category was wireless. And I wasn't talking about wireless internet. I was talking about wirelessly connecting to the projector. And there are a couple different ways to do that. A lot of people are familiar with Apple TVs, but sometimes those aren't always as reliable. One that I really like, and especially if you're using a Windows machine or a PC, is the Microsoft Wireless Display Adapter. It's just like a little stick of gum size, and it's got on one end a HDMI that you plug into the projector. This won't work with projectors that don't have that HDMI connection, but most of them do. The other end is a USB, which gives it power. And if the projector has a USB port that's powered, you could plug it into there. Or I bring in my GridIt, I have a little adapter that I could plug into a regular power source. Or you could even just take along a portable power supply that would drive this as well. So a little, something, you know, the things that you charge your phone with often have a way to plug in a USB, and then that would power this as well. Or better yet, and that's the next segment, if I can pull this up here, you can't see it, the JBL Charge, which is a Bluetooth speaker, which has a battery built in. You could do that as well to give you portable audio. But anyway, what this does is it works with your computer, many modern computers that allow you to connect to this via a direct connection. So it doesn't go over Wi-Fi, which is actually even better. You don't have to count on, you know, whatever Wi-Fi you have available, but it does a direct connection to this, and that allows you to stream your content, both audio and video, directly to the projector as if it were a wired connection. These are really cheap. I think they're under $60 at this point. Well worth it. And if you can make this work in your scenario, this kind of gives you untethered capability. So if you're using something that you want to carry around the room, let's say it's a Surface tablet or something like that, these work really well and give you just total flexibility.
Excellent. Sounds a lot easier than a long cable.
For sure. Yep. And I mentioned the JBL Charge. I'll pull it off the cables here. I've talked about this guy in the past. On the one end, it's got this USB port that will charge your devices. Like I mentioned, you could plug that Microsoft Wireless Display Adapter into it. But again, it's a Bluetooth speaker, very good speaker. I've used this in rooms as full as 30, 40 people. When you turn it up, it's got really good sound. It'll go 8 hours on a charge, and you can move it around the room just to kind of get that optimal performance. Sometimes where you're going will have audio capabilities. You plug the cable into your computer or whatever, but you're never, you know, sometimes I've had problems with static and, you know, not the greatest sound either, or maybe they just got little PC speakers for you. This really kind of takes that out of the equation. And this can be wireless, of course, as well. So it doesn't have to be right next to your computer. You can put it in a more optimal spot. So the JBL Charge, they don't sell this one anymore. They have the JBL Charge 3 or something like that. They all kind of work the same way. If you can find this one used or on eBay or something, it's well worth it. So that's how you kind of take the, you know, the unknown of audio out of the equation as well.
And of course, that's important if you're showing videos. Yep. If you know, got the perfect YouTube video that illustrates something or provides the levity, the joke that you're going to follow up with, or whatever it may be, and nobody can hear it, it kind of loses its effectiveness.
Absolutely. Yep. The video side of that piece of my blog post has to do with, well, what if the projector just doesn't work? The bulb goes out, you can't connect to it. Sometimes the cabling goes out or whatever. And you know, somehow you just can't use it. It's got that blue cast or red cast or green cast if there's a loose pin connector or something like that. Bring your own. These are, this is a little one. If this is called the Pico AAXA P300 micro projector. It is, what is it, about the size of, well, it's about 3 inches by 6 inches by 1 inch tall. So it's just a little itty bitty projector. It only pushes out about 400 lumens, which is not a ton. So you need to be in a fairly dark room for this to work. But in a pinch, you know, it can work. It will take VGA through an adapter or a full HDMI, which is kind of nice. You can just plug in your laptop right to it, Mac or PC. It does have an internal battery. I think it'll go for an hour. It does also have a DC outlet that you can plug in and go forever then. I've used this a couple times, and it's been, I wouldn't use it for a room full of 50 people, but if you're presenting to, you know, in a smaller room, 10 or 15, this works really well. And it's light and it fits in my backpack, and it has kind of the basic features that a projector would have. But this is good to have along just in case. And it will go to, I think, 120-inch image diagonal. So that's actually pretty big. Again, it's not going to be the brightest thing in the world, but in a pinch, it could save your presentation as well. So I don't always bring this. If I'm, you know, flying or something, I will bring it. But if I'm going to kind of something local, I'll maybe pull an extra projector out of our pool, which is a little bit, you know, more of a full-fledged projector. But this isn't bad to have along as well.
I like the price point, less than $400. Yep. I'm thinking that maybe some congregations that don't have any projectors or are strapped for projectors, that might be a good one just for your regular meetings where there are only a small group of people and you could just use something small like that.
Yeah, I can think of in a lot of situations, sometimes you have to make do with, you know, makeshift meeting rooms. Maybe the confirmation class needs to meet in, you know, the storage closet or something. I mean, I've heard of things like that and seen things like that too. This could be a solution to, you know, get the image, your PowerPoint a little bit bigger on the wall. So
sure.
The last section in my toolkit is called connectivity. I kind of threw this one in at the end because I think this is something that comes up almost every time. Very often you do need connectivity, and we've talked about some tools that require it, Google Slides, for instance, things that are online. And if you're doing any kind of YouTube stuff or other things, sometimes they require connectivity. And there's a couple things that can go wrong with that. One, obviously you can't connect or you don't have connectivity. or if you can, it's of such low quality. And that happens a lot in larger conferences where a lot of people are connected to the same access point and everybody's struggling. Even if you ask everybody to get off, there's multiple devices now. People have phones, tablets, computers. They're all trying to connect to this same Wi-Fi network. And you're stuck because you needed to get something on the internet. So obviously you can bring your own. And I tether my phone. I have done that on a number of occasions, but you can't always count on that either, depending on where you are. If you're kind of in an interior room or in the basement or something like that, just because you've got your phone along doesn't mean it has signal either. But it's good to have a smartphone with tethering capabilities and you know how to use it so that you're not trying to figure it out, you know, at the last minute. So just make sure that you know how to use it. And most smartphones have that or allow that at this point. Another kind of way out of that is to assume that you're not going to have connectivity. So what that means is taking screenshots, or what I've done lately is do screencasts. So if you want to demo something, do a screencast, and you don't even have to narrate it. You can narrate your own screencast when you're playing it back live, so you've got everything local. So if you want to demonstrate how to, you know, how to set up an ad in Facebook or, you know, whatever it is, you can do those screencasts. You've got those in your back pocket just in case you can't do a real live demo on a real live site. One other tool that I've mentioned in the past is using a product or a service like YouTube Red. A lot of the videos that I share are on YouTube or can be put on YouTube. And YouTube Red allows you to download those to a device. Now, they won't allow you to download those to a computer, although there are kind of workarounds for that. But with YouTube Red, you can download anything to a device like an iPad. And then you can just hook your iPad up to the projector or the Apple TV and stream it that way. So that's even kind of cool. I've used that with this little personal projector before, where my presentation is on one screen and then I have play video on, you know, right next to it on the wall. And so I don't have to break things up and jump in and out of PowerPoint or whatever. So that's another option. So wow. I probably do more presentations than a lot of people, at least in different situations. But I know that teachers do presentations every day. So there are probably horror stories that they could share and that they need to obviously account for worst case scenario too. So that's just my little toolkit and lots of things. And I didn't whip this up in the last, you know, month or two. These are things that I've kind of added to the collection over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, something like that. And feel pretty good going out to places now. I know I can probably get the job done. Sally, you do a lot of presentations. You have any tips to add to the list?
Well, I told you one already. Don't forget your power cord. That one has bit me before. The other thing is, maybe you even have a checklist on your phone or in Google Keep or something, but you pack up all your cables and peripheral items when you're done and don't leave behind your dongle like at the CMM.
I've done that before. Yes.
To retrieve for you. So just be sure on both ends. I really like the tips you shared though. Those were kind of some pro tips there, Martin, about having a second projector and having the video over there so you don't have to switch between things and stuff. That sounds like a great idea.
Some of these are crossovers even for church presentations, mm-hmm. You know, during worship, that that projector bulb can go out. There are things that can go wrong with that whole AV setup. And if you don't have backup, things could go horribly wrong. So I've heard some horror stories with that too. So that is going to conclude our ministry resources focus for the summer. Hope you've enjoyed it. Just a reminder, Sally and I did a write-up, a blog post about every one of these, and they're available on wellstech.wells.net. Just kind of mixed in there with our show notes, kind of intermingled. And if you want to learn more about any of these, and I did a quick screencast showing how to hook up to that Microsoft Windows display adapter, how that works and how easy that is. And there's a couple other videos there too, but that's the place to go if you want to learn more about any of these ministry resources, or if you want to catch up and maybe you missed a few weeks and want to catch up on some of the resources that we had.
Excellent. And we'll keep doing ministry resources. Oh, it'll just be a smaller segment in our regular show agenda.
That's for sure. All right. Let's move along to our picks of the week. Sally, you have a pick this week.
Well, my pick this week, Martin, harkens back to a conversation we had about one of my ministry resources, and that was the fact that we did a STEM-focused summer robotics camp, my husband and I, in a couple of different locations, had a really cool experience doing that. And I remember you asking me how many girls attended. I think of the week-long camps we hosted, there were 14 kids, and of that, only two girls out of the whole group. And so I know that's been something that's been a discussion point. There was some feedback at Google, I think, recently, where someone talked about women, you know, not being as good a coders or something like that. And there was a lot of, you know, debates around that and everything. But I do think in general, we want to get girls involved and not intimidated by computer coding, a big topic in schools these days. And so there's actually a website that I found by from an article I was reading. Let me just share my screen. The website name is Girls Who Code. And it was founded by this gal, Rashima Sajani, and forgive me if I pronounced that wrong, but she's in the picture that I'm showing on my screen right now from an article from the New York Times recently. And what they were talking about is that she's got this great website, Girls Who Code, and has had a lot of positive response. I think the website actually claims 40,000 girls code, based on the tracking that they do there on the Girls Who Code website. But she's branched into something new, and that's what the subject of this article is about, teaching kids coding by the book, because there is now books available from Girls Who Code. And these are like fiction chapter type books, but they're working in coding and algorithms and things like that into the subject matter of the book. And I think they have about three or four of them out now. The first one's called The Friendship Code. And it's a group of girls that form a coding club and that kind of thing. But it works in coding concepts in the subject matter of the book. And this isn't the only one they talked about. They talked about a set of books called Secret Coders, where again, they're kind of doing a coding group, but it's kind of an underground movement, and the janitor's helping them with their learning to code and solving mysteries along the way and things like that. And I thought this was just a really neat thing that they're engaging students and having, you know, giving them materials that actually ease the way into coding as well. And so I just wanted to kind of point out some of these books that are available out there. Maybe some in our teaching audience or whatever would want to make these available in the school library or whatever it is. Another thing that I read about that I thought was really interesting was from one of our favorite electronics online stores, Jameco. And they had information about something called Project Daffodil. And Jameco is kind of famous for selling, you know, all the bells and whistles, things that light up, sensors, and just all kinds of electronics and things. And so apparently a group put together kind of the maker movement, a pop-up book, and it has electronic sensors in it. And you use this 3D printed dragon to make your way through this Project Daffodil pop-up group book. And learn all about Princess Cassie and her electric dragon saving the day. And so there's all kinds of circuitry built into this book. Now, this isn't a book you're going to find for sale out on Amazon. They actually an Etsy shop, but I think the book was almost a one of a kind. But I do think it's a neat concept and something that can get us thinking about doing more projects along these lines, this interactive electronic book with all kinds of sensors and things. So the students are learning about electricity and resistors and parallel and series and switches and all kinds of things like that as well. So just a couple of interesting things that maybe would engage girls a little bit more and also just help students to learn more about coding and electronics and robotics and all those fun STEM things through books. So that is my pick of the week.
Very cool. Yeah. I started today, in fact, my first semester for Area Lutheran High School's online course, and I'm teaching a semester-long course on web page design. Got 15 high schoolers in it, mostly juniors and seniors, and it's very interesting. I was wondering what kind of the mix would be of students that would be signing up for this, because it's mostly about programming, HTML, CSS, JavaScript kind of stuff. So, coding a website from scratch, and so it is fairly technical, and it's about 50-50. Boys good. To girls, so that's a good sign. I'm interested to see the dynamic and how they work together. So it's cool.
Well, you'll have to keep us up to date on your class projects and things.
Let's do that. We're having some fun already.
I bet.
All right. My pick of the week is something that we've picked before, but because I'm doing this online class. This has become front and center to me, and that's the good products from Camtasia, or from TechSmith, specifically Camtasia. So Camtasia is a screencasting, video recording, editing, publishing tool. It's kind of like a jack of all trades, really. It's pretty much the king in this space, especially in the educational space, that allows you to mix different kinds of content, screencast, video, audio, and something that I use two or three times a week now as I'm putting together this distance learning class. And anybody who's involved with flipped classrooms and so on and so forth will recognize that you need a good program that is not going to kind of be a barrier to between you and getting your video up there. And Camtasia, I've just come to really appreciate all of its features. It's so easy to record it in different screen sizes and resolutions with different kinds of inputs and annotations. Green screens are available. We're going to talk about that with some of our community feedback. Interactivity you can build in where people can click on a piece of the screen and something will happen. Visual effects, audio effects. There is educational pricing as well. I believe it's $149. The single user price without any discounts is $199, I want to say. I can look that up in a minute. They have Mac and PC versions. For a long time, the Mac version was way behind. Now that's caught up. I think they're equals. The educational cost is $169 if you're buying in quantities of 1 to 4. But I think if this is something you do a lot, it is well worth the price. It's a one-time cost. There is some upgrades, but pretty much a lot of the things that they do upgrade are things that you may not use. But just really impressed with the quality, the flexibility. It works on fine with medium-grade machines. And the folks at TechSmith have kind of got it going on with this product. I'm curious, and I don't use Snagit as much. That's another product that can do some similar things for a lot lower price. So you may want to look at that product as well and compare the two. There are free trials for either one. There's not as much editing that you can do in Snagit, and Snagit does kind of just a screen capture as well as screencasting, but for I think a third or a quarter of the price. So that may be something you want to look at first and see if that meets your needs. But really impressed with what TechSmith is doing with their Camtasia product. And if you are flipping your classroom or doing any kind of distance learning, something you want to put on your wish list or put it in your budget.
Just makes you happy to work with TechSmith products, I think. They did a good job.
Yep.
Excellent pick.
No doubt about it. All right. So that's our picks of the week, Sally. Let's move on to community feedback.
Well, let's do, and I'm actually going to throw you a curveball. I'm going to start at the bottom and work up. So just for your eyes as you're looking at that mind map that's driving this conversation.
All right.
I will tell you that I was over on the Wells Tech Digo site. I don't know if we've ever actually shown the Wells Tech Digo site. So for those of you watching the video, here's an exciting behind-the-scenes look. We have
Is open.
A lot of great Wellsers who share links to things, and you can also comment on them and things like that. For instance,
got our old logo on theirs.
So. Yeah, I think we maybe need to update that. For instance, this week, Pastor Emil Burgess shared a link to an article from Crash Plan. Crash Plan is a backup system, and they announced that as of August 22nd, they'll no longer offer new or renew Crash Plan for home subscriptions, and they're going to sunset that product completely. So it'll only be available for businesses as of now. You can't get Crash Plan for home any longer. I'm not sure how many Crash Plan users are out there, or if Emil is a Crash Plan user. I'd be interested to know what other things you're considering.
Crash Plan, if I'm not mistaken, is Mac only.
Okay.
And I know Emil is a Mac user, so I'm just looking on their site just to verify that. I could be all wet because I have not used it. I know of it, but and you do have some options, and I think one of those options that I would recommend is Backblaze, which works on both platforms. So if you're a Crash Plan user, Backblaze might be your best bet.
Looks like they're suggesting Carbonite as an alternative. Yeah, that's as well. Another one. Yeah. That's somebody they have a relationship with, it seems. Yeah. And then also on the Digo group, we heard from Shelly Karstens, who's a STEM media librarian.
And I'll get this right.
I'll get it right. I promise.
That's the whole point of her email.
I know, but this is separate. This is Indigo, and it doesn't say it in front of me.
All right.
For just a minute, and I'll get to your proper title. She did share a link to educationcloset.com and their tools page. She says it's a great resource for STEAM lessons, project-based lessons, and art integrated lessons. And I haven't had a chance to dig around much, but they have a tools for teachers page, and looks like there's a lot of good stuff here. It does look like they have some fee-based stuff as well, based on the information at the top. So check it out, and Shelly, let us know if you have any favorites from there. Yeah. And speaking of Shelly, since I'm working from the bottom up, I will tell you that we did have a lot of good feedback from Shelly. First of all, she wrote to us and said that her official title is Library Media Specialist. So there you go. Shelly Karstens is a Library Media Specialist, and she gets to help students find great books and help teachers with technology. She's also a CSEE, which stands for Smart Exemplary Educator, and a DEN, for Discovery Education Network Ambassador. And she wrote to me separately a little while ago about being a SMART exemplary educator, and she wanted to share the website, because as of now, the opportunity is available for others to apply to be a SMART exemplary educator. And you can read more about it at gosmarttech.com/capplication, and we'll have that link in the show notes. But Shelly says that in her email, she said she thought it'd be a good opportunity for those who are teaching the classes to become a C, anyone who's teaching SMART stuff. The application part is easy, and you're connected to other educators around the world, and C's are able to beta test some of the new things coming soon. She's actually done some beta testing for SMART, and she thought that that would maybe be of interest to other teachers. So check out the application if you are interested in C. And then finally, continuing with her other email, she pointed to a couple of websites, some of which we've talked about before. Seesaw is student-driven digital portfolios where you can engage families, you can show the work that's going on in the classroom. And I think maybe Jason had this as a pick of the week at some point. She also mentioned Bitmoji, and she said that one was just a lot of fun. Let's see what she said. Just for fun, it has no educational value. The app's called Bitmoji. It's a mobile app. There's some sassy ones, but there's some fun ones in there also. So in the app, Bitmoji, you can build an avatar that looks like you, supposedly. You have lots of different options, kind of like building a Wii a little me on the Wii back in the day. Here's my avatar that looks like me, supposedly. And I'm telling you, don't worry. So I had fun with it, Shelly. Martin apparently doesn't have lots of fun in his life since he didn't go download the Bitmoji app. But
maybe I need to get on board with the
Bitmoji. We'll challenge you, see what you look like from Bitmoji.
Yes. I like your I like your Bitmoji.
Thank you, Martin. Good answer.
What are you going to do with it now?
Well, I send it to my family and all our chats and things, you know. My family's real big on staying connected. We mainly use the Facebook Messenger app because we're all a long way apart. So, yeah.
Very nice.
And then finally, Shelly shared Do Ink, which is a green screen creator for the classroom. She said, we use this in many different ways. I just went to Joann Fabrics to buy some green material. I also bought a green plastic tablecloth to put inside a pizza box to make a small green screen. My helpful hint would be to have a good mic when doing your recording. So you can learn more about this at doink.com. And actually, that leads us right into our featured video of the week, Martin, because our video of the week is an overview, and it's really cool to watch all the different creative things that they did with Do Ink and this little girl demonstrating how easy it is to make it happen. So check out that video. She even holds some balloons and eventually she lets go of them and they fly away somewhere in here. So fun stuff.
That is cool.
With Do Ink.
It's easier. It's green screening is easier than you think. There are products, fairly inexpensive products on Amazon and elsewhere that you can buy these kind of a seamless green background. And there's all kinds of YouTube videos on how to do your own. It's very cool. So be something that might be worth trying in a classroom and just kind of playing with some of these tools.
I could see doing a newscast and having imagery behind you and that kind of thing. So lots of fun potential there. We actually bought green material many moons ago and did some green screening. I'll have to look for that. I know. I'll find the one. Kevin did one where he was holding our dog and he said it was Martin Luther's dog. It was in front of the doors to the Wittenberg Chapel. So that would be appropriate for this year's Reformation celebration to resurrect our green screen.
Put a little green screen on the bottom of your Murphy bed when it's kind of in its vertical
there
position.
There you go.
You've got your little studio right there on the road.
That would totally work.
All right. Sally, we're going to have a show next week since we are through our, have completed our focus on ministry resources. What are we going to be talking about?
Well, it's a brand new season of Wells Tech, and we've decided to do something a little bit different this year. And what we're going to give a try, at least during the month of September, is a focus during the entire month on something in particular and kind of exploring it from different angles and things. And what we've chosen as our topic is meetings. So if you have some meetings that tend to drag and you have trouble paying attention for the whole hour or whatever it may be, we're going to ask you to pay attention for a whole month. So get ready.
that's a good remedy. Yeah.
And yeah,
your meetings were bad. Yeah.
We hope to give you ideas and things to make your meetings productive. Talk to some experts who have great meetings. Look at it from the education standpoint and how to improve meetings in the school setting, just all different angles of meetings. And, you know, we're always open to feedback. So we'd like to hear your feedback about meetings as well. So
yeah, we're going to try and parse it out a little bit. We'll have an interview with somebody, an expert in the field. We'll focus on some tech tools that might help. I think there will be all kinds of resources that will help us hopefully come out the other end of the month a little bit smarter and a little bit more productive too. So I'm looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. We'll see how it goes. Thank you, everybody, for joining episode 512. And I hope you come back for 513. If you want to participate in the show, we always welcome that. So your contributions maybe start at wellstech.wells.net. That's our show notes page. Email wellstech@wells.net. All those social networks, including Digo, are available to you. So you've got Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, Digo, Instagram even. We have a Wells Tech Google group that you can participate in, and there are all kinds of avenues for you to connect with us, share your ministry resources with us, or just comment on the show. We'd love to include that in the show. It's our favorite part. Thanks again for joining us, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.